Hi guys, I'm Carlos Alberto Diego from FNR. Before you listen to this podcast, I've got something to say. Without our great friends at the Lanco Group, FNR would not be here. If you need a civil engineer for your residential, commercial or industrial work, support Lanco. You know why? Because Tony Georgiadis and his team absolutely love football and they support FNR to the hilt. Give them a call on 1300 152 626. That's 1300 152 626. Thanks again. And support Lanco Group. They're terrific guys who support FNR. Hope you enjoy this podcast.
Setting up a bicycle kick. Sam Kerr has scored in the 46th. It's a showstopper.
Oh, good save by Bobby M.
Kaya Simon has rescued it for Australia.
Devanna to bury it home.
Football W with Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Football W on FNR, Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia. I'm your host, Louise Taffer, and plenty to come this morning. I'll be crossing to FFA's Head of Corporate Strategy and International and Government Relations, Mark Falvo, to discuss the FFA's Women's World Cup bid, and that to come later in the hour. We'll hear from Arsenal ladies coach Joe Montemurro, who was on FNR's Football Bosses. And the countdown is on until the Matildas play their farewell friendly for the first time ever in Perth, Western Australia against Thailand. That game is on Monday, the 26th of March, and you can head online to the Matildas website to purchase tickets. And that clash will be key in the Matildas' ongoing preparations for the Women's Asian Cup in Jordan, which commences in the first week of April. As always, I'd love to hear from you throughout the program, so please get involved at any time by giving me a call on 03 9944 9999. As we are on all of our live shows, we're giving away a traditional Easter dove cake called a Columba, thanks to our very good friends there at Ital. And again, all you need to do is just give me a call, or you can send me an SMS on 0428 933 345, or you can tweet to me at FNR_radio. You're listening to Football W here on FNR, and I'm going to start with some news headlines. Westfield Matildas goalkeeper Mackenzie Arnold will spend the upcoming season in Norway after signing with a club in the top tier of the Norwegian football. Arnold is coming off the back of an outstanding W League campaign with Brisbane Roar. She kept six clean sheets in 12 matches, and Roar conceded the fewest amount of goals in the whole competition, and they took out the Premier's plate. Moving on in international news, three of the world's top five ranked teams competed at the She Believes Cup in the USA. Following the victory in 2016, USA lifted the She Believes Cup for a second time. England, Germany and France were the other participants in the four-team tournament, which saw the US triumphing thanks to a 1-0 win over England's Three Lionesses. The game was settled in unfortunate circumstances by a Karen Bardsley own goal, but it was a landmark occasion nonetheless for the two-time FIFA Women's World Cup Player of the Year, Carly Lloyd, who captained her side on her 250th international appearance. In their previous two matches at the event, the Americans had drawn with France 1-1 and beaten Germany 1-0. The Germans, meanwhile, had a rather less successful campaign. Steffi Jones's team suffered a comprehensive 3-0 loss to France and ended the tournament in last place without a win to their name. A 1-0 defeat to USA and also a 2-2 draw with England completed their results. And would you believe that loss against Les Bleus was Germany's heaviest defeat in almost 8 years. Now, this morning, as a result, it's been announced that the German Football Association have parted company with the women's national team head coach Steffi Jones. Jones was sacked again following what the DFB said was a very disappointing run at the She Believes Cup, which the team failed to record a win. Having taken over the role after their triumph at the Women's Olympic Football Tournament in Rio, the 45-year-old has struggled to maintain that success in her first position as head coach. At UEFA Women's Euro 2017, Germany failed to reach the semi-finals for the first time in 3 decades. The DFB said they wanted to continue to work with Steffi and give her another chance even after the disappointing Euros campaign. However, having assessed the on-pitch development, the important World Cup qualifying campaign and the mixed results at the She Believes Cup, they came to a decision that the team needed a new direction. So Steffi Jones, the women's national team head coach of Germany, has been sacked. As for England, they're now under the watchful eye of former Manchester United player Phil Neville, and the three Lionesses have adopted a new playing style and are a lot more aggressive in their attacking game. In simple terms, Neville wants England to play like Manchester United did under Sir Alex Ferguson, and hopefully not how United played this morning in the UEFA Champions League. Neville's first test was in the She Believes Cup, and England won their opener 4-1 against France, drew 2-2 with Germany and lost 1-0 to USA. Overall, out of the four teams, England placed second ahead of France and Germany. Well, staying with England, Arsenal ladies coach Joe Montemurro was on FNR's Football Bosses to talk about his time at the club so far.
Welcome back to the Football Bosses here on FNR. Michael Zapponi and Tony Pignata with you. And one man who was very familiar to us all here in Australia as the coach of the women's team at Melbourne City is Joe Montemurro. These days, he's coaching over in England at Arsenal, and he's the head coach there of the women's team. Joe, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure, guys.
Talk to us about your experience over there so far. We know that you were successful as a coach at Melbourne City, and so far, so good in England. What's the experience been like for you?
Oh, look, it probably speaks for itself, you know, being at a club of such magnitude and a club that has an identity, and, you know, to be here is a little bit surreal, but it's been absolutely amazing. I suppose the industry's incredible. You're dealing with the best in the world, and, you know, just privileged and still pinching myself a little bit, but it's been great.
We've seen the league in Australia lift in standard over the last few years, and the way that the clubs treat the women's teams has certainly improved. Talk to us about how the women's teams are treated over in England at a club like Arsenal.
Yeah, look, I suppose the integration is quite normal. Arsenal, especially, you know, we're in the same facility as the men's, the under 23s and the under 18s. Our own specific area and facility, and you know, it's effectively one of the elite teams, and I can speak, I suppose, for you know, also your Chelsea, your Man City, and a handful of other clubs, and you know, it seems to be a trait that's happening all around Europe at the moment, especially in France and Germany, where the clubs are integrating the women's football, and you know, they're seeing the benefits of it.
Joe, I mean, you coached in the W League here, and how have you found the standard over in the UK versus the Australian W League?
Yeah, look, to be honest, a little bit surprised. A very high standard, a standard that you're challenged every week because you're playing against you know, very astute teams, and you're playing against world-class players on a week-to-week basis. So, you're challenged tactically because a lot of these teams are very, very well organised. The pace is a lot quicker. The tempo is a lot higher, and as I said, from a coaching perspective, challenged tactically, and you need to be super prepared. I've been surprised at the high level.
You got 10 teams, is that right, in the Premier League there for women?
Yeah, and
you
play 10 teams currently this year. Yeah, 10 teams, and they're. They're expanding it to 12 teams in both the WSL and the second division, so it's going to go to 12 and 12.
And you play play each other twice, so you have what, 18 games a season? Is that right?
Yeah, 18 games. Plus we've got the League Cup, which effectively is the WSL League One and League Two, which play off in four groups, and they play each other twice. So that's another six games there, plus quarterfinals, semis, and finals, and then you've got the FA Cup, and which is again we're in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup next week. You know, you've got another eight games there, and then obviously if you're in the Champions League, you've got another probably six, seven games there if you go right through.
So a lot more football content for the players, which can only help. And what's one of the challenges we've got in Australia, I suppose, is lack of game time for the players that are playing professionally here in Australia.
look, I mean, obviously, you know, you've probably got more ability to play games in terms of A, more teams, and B, you know, the opportunity to play intercontinental sort of stuff and I suppose stuff within Europe. So, so yeah, I mean, there's obviously that possibility from that point of view. So definitely, yeah, there's a lot more games.
How would someone like Sam Kerr fit into your team?
Oh, look, Sam's a special player. You know, I think a lot of clubs would be looking to have her in their team, and you know, she's got that X factor, which I'm pretty sure a lot of clubs would be happy to have her in.
Joe, we don't get many English players coming out. I know Jodie Taylor is playing at Melbourne City, and they just won the grand final for the third time in a row. But it's because of the seasons that overlap, and a lot of our W League players then tend to move to the US. Have you had a look at the US sort of structure as well, and how does that compare with the English structure?
Yeah, look, effectively the difficulty is that a lot of these, especially in England, Germany, France and Sweden, the top four leagues in Europe, they effectively run same as their men's season, so on, and a lot of these players are on contracts, which run annually. So effectively, the only time they get off is the June sort of period, like obviously the men's. So obviously, it's very difficult for clubs to release them, you know, during the off season to come and play. Jodie's situation was particular because she decided that she wanted to go to the US, so. So on her way to the US, she had an opportunity to go to play in Australia, and then head off to the US, which starts in April. So the leagues sort of work together. And look, in Germany and in Sweden, they have the mid-season break during the Christmas sort of January area. But again, it's very difficult for a club like, you know, Wolfsburg or Frankfurt to loan out a player to the Australian league. So it's purely a timing thing that makes it very, very difficult for European players to play in the W League.
For a long time, Joe, the US league was held up as the pillar, as the one that set the standard. How far off are those European leagues now? They're bridging the gap, no doubt, but as you said, the leagues are expanding there and you're attracting world-class players. How long before the standard there overtakes what we're seeing in the US?
Different. I think having sort of worked here a little bit now, I think they're different standards. I think, you know, definitely they're, you know, a lot of the, especially the German teams and the French teams, technically and tactically are very, very astute and very, very good, you know, and, you know, they compete very, very highly with a lot of the US teams, you know, and obviously they've got a salary cap scenario, you know, where a lot of the European teams, you know, it's open slather. They can bring in the best players for whoever they want. So a Lyon, a Wolfsburg, you know, a City or an Arsenal could definitely compete with a lot of the American teams. But as I said, the American league is definitely a showcase league, and they do very, very well.
Joe, how does the English national team compare at the moment? Where are they sort of situated in the world of football?
Sorry, I missed that. Sorry, guys.
The English national team, how are they situated in the world of football in terms of ranking and quality?
Yeah, they're in the top six at the moment, doing very, very well. They're at the Sheba Leagues Cup at the moment. US, they drew 2-2 with Germany and beat France 4-1 last week. So, you know, they're definitely up there, semi-finals in the last World Cup. And there's an abundance of very, very good footballers, both playing here in England in the WSL, but also abroad. So they're definitely doing a great job. And Phil Neville has just been appointed coach. So you know, they're definitely going for the high profile sort of idea to go forward. And the FA is definitely supporting it, and they're putting in some very, very good programs, even for the under 20s, under 17s, and so on, in regards to moulding schooling and placing them in clubs, and actually funding the clubs to give them the full athlete, I suppose, service in regards to their schooling to playing pro football and so on. So there's definitely a massive push from the Federation also.
We're speaking to Joe Montemuro, head coach of the Arsenal women's football team. Joe, just given what you said about the budgets and you look at attracting the best players in the world, I touched on Sam Kerr earlier. She is the best player in the world, recognised by FIFA this year. How long before she's playing in one of these leagues and would a team like Arsenal look at her as the leading example of a marquee player you'd like to get to the Premier League?
Yeah, look, obviously she's a special player and, you know, there'd be a lot of clubs lining up to get her. It's really, again, up to the player, you know. It's, again, a different scenario here where you've got to sign a contract and be here for copious amounts of times, and it's a normal sort of contractual situation where you've got to be here for a 3 or 4 year or 2 year, whatever the term is, where you can't float between the A League between the W League and the American League, and then obviously she's got national team duties, and I know that part of the national team sort of scenario is that they need to be required to play W League if they can. So there are a few complications in terms of with Australian players because they are in a central through a centralised contract. But look, I can see definitely that if Sam Kerr has the opportunity to play at a big club in Europe, that they definitely allow it to happen. You know, obviously for her benefit.
Is it only a matter of time getting through those barriers you mentioned of the centralised contract?
Yeah,
is it only a matter of time before we see them over there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just more a scheduling thing because obviously, you know, the requirements to play for the national team, it's pretty much like the men's national team, you know, to getting them back for Asian Cup qualifiers and so on is a difficulty. And you can understand why, you know, it was probably done in that sort of way. But again, you know, it will happen. It will happen, and I think it can only benefit players. You know, the more players that are playing in the top leagues in Europe, I mean, the growth of the game will just expand, and obviously it'll be better for the national
team. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I don't want to lose her from the W League, but I think if you're talking that type of budget and that amount of football, you're talking about 30 or 40 games a year of professional football. It can only help develop a player even further.
Yeah, well, it's a real football industry. It's real football, and to compete at the best, you've got to be with the best.
Talk to us about the type of exposure that the league gets there. We know that Fox Sports here has increased the number of games broadcast each weekend on the W League compared to last year, and let's hope that continues that trend. What's the media coverage like in England?
Yeah, pretty good. We get there's a live game, one live game every week on either BT or BBC, and there's also pay-per-view opportunities to watch other games. Sunday night there's a review show, which is basically a highlight show on BBC One or Two, and then there's a review or preview show on a Monday night also. So the coverage on free-to-air is quite good. And look. There's a lot of media coverage in terms of newspaper and print media also. So it's good, growing. I believe the rights come up in 19 or 20, and they're looking at a fairly hefty sort of rise, which hopefully will go back to the clubs.
Joe, on the 14th of March, you go for silverware. Is that right, against Man City for the Cup Final?
Yeah, no, it's exciting. League Cup Final, the Continental Cup, they call it here. Playing against Man City, and obviously they're the benchmark side, and you know they've done very, very well, and they're a super team, and it's going to be difficult, but it's just great to sort of have the opportunity to get there, and hopefully it's sort of a step forward to getting Arsenal back to where we want it to be, and that's one of the best teams in Europe, and if not the best team in the UK, so it's a great opportunity.
Joe Montemuro on FNR's Football Bosses with Tony Pignata and Michael Zapponi. And it's great to hear how he's going over there at the moment. We'll certainly check back in with him in the coming weeks. And it's also, you know, great to see an Aussie over in the UK coaching. Let's take a break, and I'll have more when I return.
Setting up a bicycle kick! Sam Kerr has scored in the 46th! It's a showstopper!
Good save by Bobby M. Kaya Simon has rescued it from... Australia. Devana to bury it home.
Football W with Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Football W on FNR, Football Nation Radio. And here on FNR, we're pretty excited to announce that you can now become one of us. Well, that's right. You can be part of our huge voice in football in the Australian community by becoming an FNR member today. I mean, if you love this game and if you love what we're doing here at FNR, you can become one of us by going to www.footballnationradio.com and clicking the Become a Member link. And by becoming an FNR member, you'll be able to enjoy the massive member benefits on offer. But above all, you can stand side by side with the 3.1 million people who are actively involved in our game in this country. The FIFA Under-20 Women's World Cup draw has been announced. I'm going to take a look at that. Group A, the hosts face a Dutch test. Tournament hosts and Papua New Guinea 2016 runners-up France start out as favourites in a pool, also featuring the Netherlands, with whom they've crossed paths with at the 2017 UEFA Women's Under-19 Championship, and completing the Group A lineup are also Ghana and our friends across the ditch, New Zealand. Group B holders are handed a pretty tough draw. Reigning champions North Korea face a testing start in their title defence. The respective CONCACAF and CONMEBOL champions Mexico and Brazil providing the opposition, along with an England side anxious to atone for group phase exits on their last two appearances in the competition at Germany 2010 and Canada 2014. Well, Group C, the big three face a bit of a dogfight. Something we'll have to give in this Group C lineup, with heavyweights USA, Japan and Spain fighting it out for two quarterfinal slots, while Paraguay will also hope to feature after their fine showing in the South American qualifiers. And as for Group D, some of the big guns collide in a bit of a daunting section. Group D comprises no fewer than three former competition finalists, China PR, Nigeria and Germany, the last two of whom faced off in, would you believe, the 2010 and 2014 finals. And completing the quartet are the FIFA Women's World Cup debutants, Hati, who will be hoping to reprise the form they showed in qualifying and defy some of those odds. Now, leading on from the 2016 Under-20 Women's World Cup, there have been some real positives continuing on from that host country, Papua New Guinea. It's just been 15 months since PNG hosted the Under-20 Women's World Cup, and there's been a bit of a legacy that's been left, and it remains to be quite significant. There's been a rise in players' numbers, and something a little bit less tangible is the change in mentality in the nation, and one of which the locals said is traditionally male-dominated. This is a great story. Margaret Acker spent 14 years representing PNG, and now she's helping guide senior male players at the top level after being appointed coach of PNG's National League side Southern Strikers. Margaret said hosting the Under-20 Women's World Cup is something you cannot compare to any other event. It has been a positive effect on the girls in this country, and you can see a lot of girls now playing football in the park and having, you know, some great activity in their lives. There have also been a lot of campaigns regarding gender equality, Margaret said. The tournament helped to create a reality where people could say, you know, girls can play football. Margaret also said she remembers one of the girls' programs in the tournament, and they actually had some boys come out and cheer the girls on, and she said that is something that is rarely seen, and she witnessed it with her own eyes. And when girls take up an activity like football, it brings a lot of respect. And in a FIFA report, it also mentioned that that tournament catapulted female sport in the Oceania's consciousness and opened up opportunities for females both on and off the field. And as for Margaret, she is actually the first woman in PNG to earn an OFC, that's a Oceania Football Confederation B license, and has international experience coaching at the 2014 Youth Olympic Games as well as the under 17 level. So fantastic stuff what's going on in the Oceania region post under 20 FIFA Women's World Cup. This week on the ABC, there was a feature on the Matildas, and it was beautifully compiled. It was on Australian Story, and it was called Pitch Perfect. Here's a little bit from the documentary on Matildas veteran Lisa Devanna.
And that's how I knew Santa wasn't real, because he never gave me boots.
Not too bad.
I remember my mate, I remember him crapping boots, and I said, I'll give you $4 for those boots. And that's my first pair of boots. And I was like, this is the best gift ever. You could have gave me anything in the world, but those boots meant the world to me. I was a bit of a rebel. I got suspended a couple of times. And it was being in a football program that probably kept me in school at times. Thinking, who is this person? And then I can't remember, someone on my coach goes, do you know that's Cheryl Salisbury? I'm like, Cheryl who? And she goes, yeah, she plays for the Matilda. She's like one of the key players in the team. Well, I was like, I have to be in the same team with Cheryl. I'm going to be in the same team as Cheryl. I first became Matilda, obviously got to meet people, and they told me about their struggles and their battles, and, you know, they weren't even considered as athletes. And it was a tough shoot road for them, because they had nothing.
Here's Lisa Devanna. One way then the other, bamboozling the defence. Cuts back inside, Cheryl Salisbury. It's a good deflection, it's in. She's equalised at 2-2.
It was just amazing, the reception and the tension, and the world gone nuts for the Matildas. We were like, out of every country there, I think we were the most team talked about, because we were just such underdogs.
That was Matilda Lisa Devanna talking on Australian Stories, Matilda's documentary, Pitch Perfect. And it's absolutely fantastic to see what Devanna's achieved over the past decade, and we'll certainly be continuing this exciting discussion when we return from a break. We'll be talking the FIFA Women's World Cup bid for 2023 with FFA's Head of Corporate Strategy and International and Government Relations, Mark Falvo.
Setting up a bicycle kick, Sam Kerr has scored in the 46th. It's a showstopper.
Good save by Bobby M.
Kaya Simon has rescued it for Australia.
Devanna to bury it home.
Football W with Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Football W on FNR, Football Nation Radio, with Louise Taffer. And it's time to cross to FFA's Head of Corporate Strategy and International and Government Relations, Mark Falvo, to discuss FFA's Women's World Cup bid. Good morning, Mark, and thank you for joining me.
No problem. Thanks, Louise.
It's a really exciting time in women's football in Australia. I mean, the Matildas are gearing up to qualify for the 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup, and we're also bidding to host the Women's World Cup in 2023. How are preparations going for it?
Yeah, they're coming along. It's still quite an early stage in the process. FIFA's yet to officially provide details of the timeline and what the hosting requirements will be. But based on what the timeline looked like 4 years ago for the 2019 edition, we expect that any month now we will receive the call for expressions of interest and all of the accompanying hosting documents, with a view to then submitting a bid book by the end of the calendar year, and a decision being taken on or around the France 2019 Women's World Cup.
Oh, that's fantastic. And in terms of the support that the FFA's had, the FFA would no doubt be really pleased to have the backing from the federal government. When we heard, I think it was last month, they committed an extra $4 million in funding.
Yeah, that's right. The support of the Commonwealth has been fantastic and is essential to the bid, as much as it is the delivery of the competition. Delivering and preparing a bid is quite a time-consuming and intensive exercise. It's a lot of work that needs to happen in a relatively short period of time, and it's a lot of work that needs to happen across different government jurisdictions, because there's all sorts of agreements and support that needs to be secured, and it is important that FFA is able to resource up to be able to complete all the work to a high standard. So the funding that the Commonwealth has given has enabled us to recruit a dedicated Women's World Cup bid team. A lot of the staff that have been recruited have been drawn from the Asian Cup local organising committee. So there's a lot of expertise as far as major football event delivery is concerned, and a lot of knowledge around what the likes of AFC and FIFA look for when an event is delivered. So I think it means that we're a bit ahead of the game just because of the experience that we now have, and whether it's from the delivery of the Asian Cup or previous bids as well.
Mark, how will the funding help see that we could be leaders even further and win the rights to host the FIFA Women's World Cup?
So the funding, as I said, has allowed us to recruit a team. There's a whole exercise in budgeting and developing the costs of the event from the ground up. So we have a finance person on board looking at that. We've recruited a couple of host city managers or bid managers who will liaise with the working groups that have been set up in every state and territory government as part of the bidding process. It's great to date that we've had the support and interest of all state and territory governments around the country, as well as the Commonwealth. Those staff will also be responsible for engaging with stadia and training sites. We also have a campaign coordinator who will pick up a lot of the marketing and communications aspects of the bid, because we want to make sure that this bid not only presents well, but also engages the football community. That's an important part of what FIFA will look at in terms of, is the community behind it? Does the Australian public believe in the event?
Yeah.
And I think that's plain to see, certainly from the growing appetite and support for women's football and the Matildas more broadly.
Oh, most definitely. And they've been in stellar form. And, even in Newcastle, we saw them really ignite a whole community down there with the sellout of that stadium. And I also see that Colombia, Japan, New Zealand and Thailand and also South Korea are bidding to host the 2023 Women's World Cup. Or do you have any idea at the moment which countries are our biggest competitors?
Yeah, I think Colombia has formally had made an approach to FIFA, I think, late last year, expressing their intention to bid. South America has never hosted a Senior Women's World Cup before, and it's obviously a hotbed of football globally, and women's football has lagged oddly in that part of the world. So that's certainly there's a reason to take a World Cup there. But I think also Asia has been a leading confederation in women's football. A number of senior women's national teams in the top 15 of the FIFA rankings that hail from Asia, and it's been now quite some time since Asia hosted a Women's World Cup. Mm-hmm. So, look, I think that there's a lot of possibility. They're all fine opponents. They all would have reasons to bid and host the Women's World Cup. In our case, we haven't hosted a FIFA tournament since the World Youth Championships in 1993.
Yeah.
So it's a long time between drinks. We would argue that it's probably time. We'd certainly demonstrated our ability to deliver an excellent event from the 2015 Asian Cup. But I think also, women's football is on the march. Women's sport is on the march in Australia. There's a part that Australia can play in growing women's football around the region, and indeed, can lead the world. So that's, I think, part of some of the messaging that will come out over the course of the bidding process.
And going back to, some of the strategy involved with our Women's World Cup bid, there's been developments with the new stadiums in Sydney?
Yeah, that's certainly one aspect of the bid that will be looked at by FIFA. The quality of the infrastructure that is put forward will be an important factor in any decision. It's great to have new stadia sprouting up all around the country. There's obviously a debate that's raging on in New South Wales at the moment around stadia.
Mm.
New stadium being built in Western Sydney and also at Moore Park. And ANZ Stadium is the other one, which is the big stadium that's been proposed to be redeveloped into a rectangular configuration. I mean, that would be a showpiece venue for a FIFA Women's World Cup. Obviously, there would be a process to go through, but I think, you know, fans want to see, football fans in particular, want to be close to the action, want to feel the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And rectangular venues are an important part of that. But we've obviously seen, you know, new venues pop up all around the country, and that's part of the process that we're going through at the moment with governments to work through which stadia will be included in our big book.
Yeah, that's fantastic, and it's very, very exciting. And if we did host the Women's World Cup, do you think we could see a change in women's football, and maybe that could be the catalyst for moving football in Australia forward?
Absolutely. I think, you know, a Women's World Cup in Australia would absolutely turbocharge the development of the women's game, and I think women's sport more broadly, and even beyond sport. I think this could be... this would accelerate the drive towards gender equality at all levels of society, because it is an event of that scale. And it's actually part of what we want to achieve during the course of the bid, irrespective of the outcome. We want this bidding process, and obviously if we're successful, to be used as a platform to promote participation, to promote, you know, greater representation of women in leadership positions, and all aspects of gender equality throughout our sport. It gives us a great opportunity to discuss and explore these possibilities with governments, with corporates, so that we can also invite, you know, more corporate support and investment in our game, because it's the fastest growing women's participation sport in the country, you know, huge numbers, and you know, we really do see that the sky's the limit, and we think that this event will help us get there a whole lot quicker.
And Mark, staying with women's football, I saw the FFA also announced an Asian Australia Football Exchange, which is like coinciding with the Australian government's Asian Australia Special Summit. And I was particularly excited to see that our young Matildas will be playing an international friendly, which I believe is this Friday in Sydney.
That's right. Yeah, it's a big week in Australian ASEAN relations. Australia is hosting the Australia ASEAN Summit, hosted by our Prime Minister later this week. As part of the week's activities, there's a whole host of football-related activities to underpin that initiative. On Monday, we hosted the ASEAN Football Federation Council meeting in Sydney. That's the second time that we've done so since we became members of the ASEAN Football Federation. We have, throughout the week, a female administrators exchange program that's going on. I came from a leadership workshop that was kicking off just this morning. Mm-hmm. But that's now the third year of exchange programs that we've been running with the other 11 member associations of ASEAN, helping to build the capacity of female football administrators throughout the region. It's great to see that some of the women that have gone through and participated in this exchange program now hold leadership positions within their own associations. Some of them are now general secretaries or deputy general secretaries, which is great. We also, as you mentioned, we have the Thai under-19s women's national team playing a friendly against our young Matildas on Friday. But we're also hosting the under-19s Thai women's team at the AIS throughout the course of the week, again, to share some of our experience and facilities, you know, sports science and other you know, sort of technical and performance related information and experience, again with a view to helping women's football and the development of football more broadly in the region.
Yeah, most definitely. And being in Australia, we're so far away from the rest of the world, and I guess in terms of that international friendly, we don't really get that much international experience to play other countries outside of Australia and further develop the players themselves. And it's being held in Sydney, so that again is fantastic. It's a great example to help the brand and, again, engage the local community.
Absolutely. And I think it's a great example of alignment between, you know, the footballing need, as you say. You know, we need to present as many opportunities for our youth national teams to play. But it also aligns neatly with some of our government relations imperatives. It's with the support of the Office of the Prime Minister that we're able to deliver some of these activities this week. We're hosting the match in the middle of the day intentionally during school lunchtime hours. We've got roughly 1,000 school children that we expect to attend the match, along with other dignitaries and other officials. So it'll be a great celebration of the relationship between Australia and the rest of Southeast Asia, and we'll see some good football from some talented young female footballers as well.
Yeah, there's plenty of them coming up, Mark, believe me. And the Australian government, again, is backing that football exchange, as you just touched on. And we can really see how much the Australian government is supporting our overall game.
Yeah, I think the Australian government, the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, they see the value that football brings as far as our Australia's international relations are concerned. I mean, obviously, the Australian government works with many different sports around the world, but increasingly we see more ideas and initiatives being brought to us, and I think that's a testament to the effort and the time it's been spent in recent years developing closer working relations with the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. Whenever we have a national team, playing around the world, there's always contact with our posts in those countries. There's always collaboration and work that's being done on the ground to, I guess, use football to foster closer relations, people to people, business to business, and also government to government. That's something that's been going on now for quite some time. It's great that the Australian government sees the benefit of and the opportunity that football diplomacy can bring.
Yeah.
But it's also because, so many governments around the region are so directly involved in football and take an interest in it. As I understand it, the president, for example, of the Myanmar Football Association will be part of the trade delegation that's coming this week as part of the Australia-ASEAN summit. So it's a good example, as I touch on there, that football often commingles with business, and it can make connections and provide opportunities that otherwise are very difficult to create.
And, speaking of providing opportunities, I mean, Perth, there hasn't ever been a Matildas game played in Perth. The Western Australia community will see the Matildas very soon. How are ticket sales going for that friendly against Thailand?
Yeah, they're coming along well. I think we're tracking for a healthy crowd there. It's great that the Matildas are able to play in Perth as a warm up, before the Women's Asian Cup in Jordan.
Yeah.
It's again, I get points to the possibility, geographically our proximity to Asia that it's quite easy for Thailand to pop down and prepare. And so we're very happy to be hosting the Thai senior women's national team alongside the under-19s earlier this week. But we're expecting a healthy crowd, and we would encourage all Perth football fans and sports fans to see a fantastic team in the flesh as they prepare for to launch an attack on the Asian Cup in Jordan.
Indeed, and qualify for that Women's World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've obviously got a tough group in Jordan, but as you say, it acts as a qualification process for the FIFA Women's World Cup. It's important that we perform well, not just because we want to win the silverware in Jordan, but because we need to make sure that we're at the big dance in France in 2019.
That's it. Well, Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you on Football W this morning, and I appreciate you taking the time out to chat to us.
No worries, Louise. Anytime. Thanks.
Thanks, Mark. FFA's head of corporate strategy and international government relations, Mark Falvo, joining me there to discuss the latest in Australia's FIFA Women's World Cup bid. Well, you're listening to Football W on FNR Football Nation Radio, and that's all I've got time for today. Remember, you can listen to all those interviews in full as many times as you want. And again, I just want to thank Mark there for joining me. I'll be back at the same time again with Football W next week. Thanks for your company.
Setting up a bicycle kick! Sam Kerr has scored in the 46th! It's a showstopper!
Good save by Bobby M.
Kaya Simon has rescued it for Australia.
Devana to bury it home.
Football W with Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.